right, Hollywood. We Hollywood swinging up in here, and we are so glad to be back with you. I'm Moya for How Betty Davis Saved My Life, Classic Hollywoods, and my co-conspirator in all this madness. Ma'am, what is your name?
And I'm Georgia, her trusty sidekick.
Georgia is not the sidekick. Co-conspirator. Enabler. We all in this. Don't put this on me. We all in this together. And Georgia, we have been derelict in our duties. We've been away for a minute. Seems like I haven't talked to you in a while. We haven't been live in a while because, you know, life happens. And so I'm just so happy to be here with you and our wonderful, wonderful audience.
Oh, me too. I've missed being with all of you.
Yes, yes. And I just want to give a shout out to our listening audience and all the listening platforms on, so you can catch this audio next Saturday, 11 a.m. on Apple Podcast app, Spotify, iHeart, and iTunes, as far as I know. May have to check that. May have some, we always have some technical difficulties, but as far as I know, and of course, as far as I know, we are still on the U of Tubes. Thank you to all our wonderful listeners there, watchers rather. And I do thank you for commenting on the videos and the feedback. We appreciate the good, bad, and the ugly. Definitely do that. And so, Georgia, without further ado, I'm so excited that we are here today. What is our movie for today, Georgia?
We are doing Jaws from 1975, the movie that started the whole thing with big summer blockbusters. This was the iconic classic blockbuster for summer movies.
Yes, and so I'm getting rusty and all I do, but here we go. The sharing the screen, and you know, Georgia, I was like, why did we pick this movie? Like, everybody named Mama knows everything about Jaws, but you know, y'all ain't heard us talk about it. So until you hear us talk about it, ain't been talked about. we want to talk about this movie, and it's the end of summer. I guess, well, September technically is the end of summer. And so we definitely want to acknowledge that. But, Georgia, get us started about Jaws. Like, what? I mean, we're going to try to do our best to talk about what hasn't been talked about with Jaws. But we're going to try. So, Georgia, go ahead. Get us started.
Okay, well, we're going to take you behind the scenes here a little bit and tell you all the things that you really didn't know about Jaws. This movie was the highest grossing film of all time until the release of Star Wars 2 years later. This broke all records, and there were several reasons for that. Now, this movie is very historic for the reason that it forever changed the way made, marketed, and watched. And this scene that Moya is showing you right now, she was a model, a swimsuit model, and I know this just barely escaped getting an X rating because she was actually completely nude during the filming of that opening scene.
Yeah, the most, like, just one of the most iconic scenes in the movie.
Yeah, she's skinny dipping there, and and there's an unexpected partner.
Yeah, so, uninvited, unexpected partner, right?
Yeah, yes, indeed. Now, this started the trend of Hollywood going after big box office returns from action and adventure movies released during the summer with wide releases and very heavy advertising. Now, to get back to the actual movie itself, this was based on the book, but actually the book hadn't even been published yet. So they took the manuscript and they made it into the movie. And now get this, Steven Spielberg was only 26 years old when he directed this movie. He'd done only one previous feature film. That was the Sugarland Express. This is from a guy who was rejected from USC film school.
Mm-hmm. Wow, isn't that something? Never give up on yourself.
That is so true. But he really, when he heard about this movie, he wanted to make it so badly, and they let him do it. And it, the movie was so amazingly successful that it had three sequels, but none of them were directed by Steven Spielberg.
Yeah, they stunk. We don't even acknowledge them. No, they don't exist.
No. Well, because it was the first major motion picture to be shot actually on the ocean, it was plagued with problems.
Yeah.
Steven Spielberg felt like, you know, I want to give up. He had so many problems with it. First of all, it went over budget and over schedule. And the mechanical shark, which they all affectionately named Bruce, the mechanical shark malfunctioned so often.
Now, was that because Steven Spielberg was named after one of the producers who were working on their nerves? I heard that. That was a
yeah, the producers were also really on him. That's another thing that happened, too. Mm-hmm. Now, when they had first, this animatronic shark, when they first started using it, it was like in, you know, like in tanks in Hollywood, in the Hollywood area. Uh-huh. So when they moved it out to the ocean, the salt water really wreaked havoc on the shark. It caused all kinds of mechanical problems with the shark. And so sometimes they'd only get two shots in, one in a day, one in the morning and one in the afternoon, and while they waited and waited for it to be repaired.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, didn't he have like a nervous breakdown damn near?
The mental health.
Yeah.
You were so right.
Oh my
God. Yeah, Moya, he did. He had a mental health episode during this, and he just had all kinds of self-doubts and self-recrimination over it, and he thought that this shark was going to kill his movie career before it got started.
Yeah, like, what was I thinking? That ain't what was I thinking moment. So there he is, the young Spielberg clowning around with the shark, the animatronic shark. And I know I'm getting ahead of you, but if not this shark, but maybe at some point was this shark the one used at Universal Studios, or like they got another one or something? Because, you know, that's like a popular attraction, a Jaws attraction. Do you know?
I don't know if that's the same one or not, but it's sure a lot of fun to do that.
Right. I would love to see that. The King Kong and the Jaws exhibits. I would love that.
Oh, they are so much fun. Oh, it's great fun.
Have you been to Universal Studios?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, gosh. We got to talk about that.
I've been to it a few times. Yeah. Oh, it's fun where the shark comes at you.
Oh, y'all like, goodness. Ah, yeah. So were you genuinely afraid?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Moya, let me tell you something. This movie gave me such galeophobia, which is fear of sharks. I am the chicken of the sea. But I'm just saying that it's a lot of fun. What you do is you get on this tram and it takes you through the town of Amity, and there's like a little marina and boats and docks and everything. Mm-hmm. And it takes you through it. As you're going through it, you go into the water, and all of a sudden, you know, it's just quiet, and boom, this giant, humongously big shark with its open jaws, mm-hmm, at such terrifying speed just comes right at you.
Oh, man.
And everybody leans and screams, you know, ah, you know. It's,
I would
it's a lot
think
of
people
fun.
Would be prepared for it now. So when did you go, like, and we guys, we're going to get back to the movie, but when did you go the first time to Universal?
I've been to it like back in the 60s, and then I went again, and they changed it up because, you know, they're always up, you know, changing and upgrading it.
Yeah.
And then I think it was had to be probably in the 80s, I guess.
Okay. So in the 80s, that's when you saw the Jaws exhibit, obviously, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And so you, like, were genuinely scared. Like, you had no idea. You didn't know what was going to happen?
Well, I had a feeling it was going to happen, but it still scared me anyway.
Oh, wow. That's fun. That sounds like a ton of fun. Okay, we're going to get back to the movie. Sorry, guys.
Yeah. Well, the reason this movie is so big in the way it changed movie making history is because before the summer of 75, Hollywood studios did not advertise their movies on network TV because it was just simply too expensive. So about 30 days before this movie was to be released, Universal Studios advertised 30-second trailers for the movie on network TV. And so what happened was, with everybody seeing these trailers, Jaws ended up breaking the box office records previously set by The Godfather and The Exorcist. And so now, from this point on, film the advertisement equals half of the production budget. That's how much money we now put into advertising because Jaws broke all records and made it so successful. And also one other, a couple other things. Oh, I'm sorry, Maury, did you want to say something?
No.
Okay. Now, before this movie was, whenever a movie was opened in theaters, what they did was it opened in major cities, and then later they expanded it to smaller cities and eventually even smaller towns. Now, with this movie, what they did was they released it everywhere at the same time, coast to coast, it just everywhere.
Okay.
And because in summer used to be the slowest time of the year for theaters.
Really?
Used to be. Yes. So Jaws also introduced an era when movies started being marketed to a younger crowd during the summer. And so after Jaws, movies were targeted to teens who dominated the summer lineup. And that took off with Star Wars in 1977. Yeah. So from that point on, you're starting to see all these big summer blockbuster movies being made. You could say Jaws was the monster who ate Hollywood, but so what it did was it resulted in bigger marketing budgets, films opening in theaters coast to coast, and summer became the all-important season for Hollywood profits. And the interesting thing about this movie is it was had such a profound impact on the public when it was released that it filled the theaters, but it emptied the beaches.
Yeah. And I just saw the picture of the people fleeing for their lives in the movie. And when did people start coming back to the beaches? Do you know?
Exactly. But, you know, I still go out and I swim out in, you know, the Gulf, you know, off Galveston. I will do it. But let me tell you, I stay a lot closer to shore. And every once in a while when I'm out there swimming, I keep my eyes open for a fin. And if I feel a fish that hits or bumps my leg, it just sends me into a panic.
So this movie has just traumatized and is traumatizing forever, I guess.
Well, yeah, you know, Moya, because remember, Psycho made us afraid to take showers, and then
that's so crazy.
And then Jaws made us afraid to go into the ocean.
Yeah. But you know, they just recently had people killed by sharks. Like, was it this summer? They had shark attacks, had shark bites, and then we know the young lady who was the surfer had lost her arm to a shark bite. So it's real now, but the thing about it now this was a great white, because you know there's several sharks, bulls and great whites and tigers, but this also spawned Jaws later on, like on the Discovery Channel. Like, people are obsessed with sharks. Like, there's Shark Week and people like have parties and like gatherings and look at Shark Week, which is so funny to me. Because I'm like, that's like looking at Snake Week. Like, they got people who love reptiles and snakes. I just couldn't do it. It's just will creep me out. And it's a predator. I'm not going to look at a predator.
You know, it taps into our most primal fears, because these creatures have existed with very little change through evolution. I mean, they've just, you know, they're just the same. I know it.
But now some of them only feed at night, right? Aren't there some rules to sharks? Like, some of them only feed at night, I believe. Or they only attack when they're hungry or they feel threatened. And y'all correct me in the comments. This is not a lesson on mammals or you know, biology or whatever, like that kind of stuff. But, you know, because, like, aren't there rules to, like, you can avoid a shark attack or shark attack, or, like, you just screwed?
Well, basically you are, but they have a few little things that they tell you. First of all, You don't want to swim anywhere near where there are schools of fish. Mm-hmm. And yeah. And you don't want to wear like any kind of glittery jewelry because they will mistake it for like a fish's scales,
okay.
You know, that shine or shimmer a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And also because, you know, they have an extraordinarily strong sense of smell.
Yeah.
I wouldn't go in the water if I had like a cut that was bleeding or something
blood. Yeah, blood in the water.
You know, like that kind of a thing. But, you know, it's really amazing that you hear about people and maybe only as little as 3 feet of water, yeah. You know, and they'll suffer a bite. Mm. And supposedly they say that, you know, they really don't like the taste of humans. And so they'll just have a chomp or a nibble. And then if they don't like the way, you know, then they're like, okay. But I don't entirely believe that.
They even know
that.
How disgusting we are. They're like, even a shark has standards.
I know, oh right?
Hilarious. Like, you are diseased. Get out of here.
But, I mean, when you think about it, oh my gosh, you know, it's just, you're dealing with something that has like a three and a half foot wide mouth, 300 razor sharp teeth, crushing jaws, and a deadly stew of bacteria. And so, I mean, if one thing doesn't get you, the other one will, you know? I mean, but you're supposed to poke them in the gills or poke them in the eye or something like that. Because I've heard people saying that they actually
I'm dying of a heart attack. Because if he hasn't eaten me by now, I have clearly went into cardiac arrest. I'm dead and drowned. So ain't no poking nothing. No.
Well, I went to an aquarium where they had like these little baby sharks in there, and they would swim by and you could like touch them as they swam by.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I touched it, and it is not smooth. It's got a rough, their skin feels rougher than what you would think.
Like a tough rubber. Because I know what you're talking about. I didn't pet them. I didn't pet the stingrays because I just couldn't take the chance. So I'm a chicken. You're the chicken of the sea, I'm the chicken of the land. I'm not touching any of that crap. Mm-mm. Hell no.
I don't blame you, Moya.
Go ahead.
I'm going to go ahead and get into the actual plot, and then we'll talk some more. So for those of you who may not have seen the movie, this movie takes place during the height of the summer season, and it's off the coast of New England. There is a rogue great white shark, and he starts attacking and killing people. And there's a new police chief played by Roy Scheider, and he's just arrived from New York to have a safer, more peaceful environment for his family. And so when he first thinks that there has been a shark attack, he wants to close the beaches.
Mm-hmm.
But the mayor opposes this because he thinks it will result in the town's businesses and economy suffering.
And this is Roy Scheider, for those of you who don't know, a very famous actor in the 70s. He was in several blockbusters, so yeah, he had it going on. Dreyfuss as well, Robert Shaw, and we'll talk about them later. Mm-hmm.
Now, Richard Dreyfuss plays an oceanographer, and he acts kind of like a consultant, and he's confirming their worst fears. He's saying, this was not just a shark, but a great white.
Mm-hmm.
And so the town offers a reward to actually destroy the shark. And so you have this very experienced ship captain, and played by Robert Shaw, you see there on the far left. And so he takes on the challenge for the reward. And so he takes them all out in the ocean with the goal of killing the shark. And then you have a gripping battle of men versus shark. It just takes off from there.
Yes.
Very enthralling.
It is. And so, you know, everybody harps on, obviously, the gore of the shark. And it's some parts, it's not like gore like we know now. But, you know, at the time, that was something else, you know. But to me, revisiting this movie, I found the story of the three male characters, far more interesting Then, like, when I was a kid, I saw it. I can't remember when. I might have been a teenager or something. So, of course, like, I'm, you know, you're looking for the shark and the thrill of it all. But as an adult, you know, with lived experiences, I found this Jaws as a celebration of manhood and masculinity in a stratified way. Because, and I'll get into that, but Georgia, finish your thought.
You know, I can see where you would say that, Moya, definitely. But, you know, an interesting thing about this is that both Richard Dreyfuss and Robert Shaw did not get along. They had an ongoing feud. So that also added a little bit to the director Steven Spielberg's troubles. But yes, I can definitely see. Yeah, there's some funny things that happen in this movie. If you watch for him. There is a lot of humor in here. A lot of humor takes place. Some very funny scenes.
Yeah, you got to pay attention. And that's another thing. If you just look at it for the shark attacks and whatever, you're going to miss out on a lot of funny scenes, like you said. And the dialogue, it was well written. Because it could have just easily just been shark attack, shark attack, shark attack. But the dialogue was realistic, you know, because it almost read like a documentary now, like I said, looking at it again. It was almost like a reality documentary type series, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, because the way that they did the atmosphere and the whole ambiance of it, it felt so realistic. It felt like a reality show. It really did.
Yeah, a real thing. But yeah, I was, like I was saying, I totally, and try to find the picture of the mayor, and it's a character actor we're all familiar with, and I'll try to get his name in a second. So he's the mayor, and he always plays a jerk in almost all the movies that he's in. He plays a really good jerk, and I'll find his name in a second. But like I was saying, you know, I'm glad you kind of saw that too, that it was manhood and masculinity on display in all facets of it, because you had Roy versus Rob versus Richard Dreyfuss, their respective characters. And it was three types of representations of manhood / manliness. So with Roy Scheider's character, you had the sensitivity, you know, the sheriff. And Georgia, you know, if you disagree or see something different, please let me know. Versus the brawn of Shaw's character, captain of the ship, of the boat rather, versus Dreyfuss's character, the intellect, the student of it all. And so to me, although that man, that sensitivity, the brawn and intellect girl, that to me, that equals the perfect man. I don't know about you. That is the perfect man.
Brawn and intellect?
Huh?
That is a very brawn and intellect. That is a very winning combination.
And
in
sensitivity,
a man.
Still sensitive.
And sensitivity,
yeah.
Yes.
With Roy Scheider, the sheriff, yeah.
Oh yeah, that the three of them together, brawn, intellect, sensitivity. Yeah, boy, I think you just created the perfect man.
And then we do have some estrogen in there, besides the shapely swimmers, if you will. We have the wife, and I'm gonna get everybody's name in a second. And she was realistic because, you know, nowadays, girl, she, you know what's going to happen if they did this. She would have wrestled the shark out of the water and put a wrestling move on it, put in a headlock and saved the town single-handedly whilst the one man she allowed to be around her, you know, went woo and all this kind of foolishness. So, but the wife was realistic because she had a prominent role, but she had to support her husband, be the stable for him and really the town, because nobody knew, this was uncharted, if you will, territory. But I like how they played her, because she was still strong without being, you know, a nag or imposing. She was, you know, supporting her husband, as far as I saw it like that, you know. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, I felt the same way you did, Moya. I thought she did a real good job as the wife, and you know, just enough of a, like, where she was strong and insightful in her own way.
Right. And like I said, so I, like I said, looking at it through these eyes, I really think this And people probably saying, duh. But it's not, to me, it's less of a horror movie. I mean, it is a horror movie, but it's really a guy movie. You know, because it rings to me like Run Silent, Run Deep. We did that. Go check it out on our platforms with Clark Gable. Was it Burt Lancaster? I hope I'm not getting it wrong. Run Silent, Run Deep. Then Burt Lancaster again with Kirk Douglas as they were adversaries. And I almost said it, you know, the movie where they were, we almost went to war with each other. Oh, the military movie. I can't think of it. I almost said it. But
7 days in May.
Thank you. And then in the '70s, you know, Georgia, they had a lot of those buddy cop movies that were coming out. And that was the height of those really good male buddy cop movies. And Roy Scheider was in with, wasn't he in the French Connection with Gene Hackman, right? If I'm not mistaken. And then, like you said, The Godfather. So this was really the height of, not the height, because you had a lot of good men movies, you know, since the inception of Hollywood, manly movies. But to me, the 70s and going into the 80s, really good men movies. And then to me, I think this movie is underrated as a man movie without being the men being jerks. Now the captain, Shaw's character, and we don't want to give away too much, you know, you could look at him in a different light. I don't want to give too much away. But for the most part, I thought it was people. It was real people on the screen. And what I loved about how Spielberg, when you first see the shark attack the person, when the people on at the beaches, how Spielberg kept flipping the camera closer and closer to Roy Scheider to get his reaction. But Roy Scheider he was trying to watch the water, but he kept getting these distractions of people talking to him. And we can all relate to that. It's like, yo, I'm trying to work here and y'all distracting me with this foolishness, you know. So I loved it for that. And going back to the, like I said, Moby Dick, the great classic, Moby Dick, Old Man in the Sea. Because the shark, I don't know if your research, but I think when I saw something about Jaws years ago, the shark is an allegory, of course, for man versus his immortality. Man versus with Spielberg, man versus machine when they were making it, but man versus nature. And so the ongoing struggle of that are all hidden. And I know those of you who are Jaws fans, you already know all this. But, you know, like I said, now when we revisit these movies, especially myself as an adult, I really see it.
Moya, those are really amazing insights. Yes, I would have to agree with you on all those points you made. And yeah, I felt like there was a male bonding thing going on. It was like a little bit of a buddy thing towards the end there, which I thought was really great. I really enjoyed it. And, but that was also part, not only was it maybe the most like adventurous and enthralling and just gripping, intense movie, but also it was injected with some levity and some humor in there. And, I thought it was just perfectly done.
Perfectly
it was
done.
Amazing. Right. How they did that. And, I have to tell you something, during the summer of 75, I didn't see the movie when it came out because I was really busy. I was away because Uncle Sam had me. I was basic training at the time. So I missed out on all the big Jaws hoopla and didn't get to see the movie. And so I'd seen so many scenes of it. I felt like I'd seen it. No, I saw it the night before last and last night for the first time.
Oh, really?
Yes.
What?
Yes.
Get out of here.
I know, right?
So once again, you're
deprived.
Cinema virgin no more. Wow.
Yeah, no more. And to think that this movie next year will be the 50th year since it's come out.
Okay. That is
75. Yeah, 75 to like 2025. Yes, the 50th anniversary of its release.
That is crazy. Wow. Where is time going? Murray Hamilton, that's his name. And y'all who played the Mayor Vaughn, he's been in a million things. And I was trying to find the wife's name. Okay, yeah, Lorraine Gary. Let me make sure that's who that is. And let's see, is she still with us? Yeah, she's still with us. Okay. 'Cause she went on to do the sequels that, like I said, they're horrible. So we're not even gonna talk about them. But yeah, I don't recall seeing her in a lot of other stuff. I'm not, like I said, I just don't know. But wow. Georgia, that I did, I had, if you said you had not seen, I don't remember that. And I'm so glad we were able to experience together, so to speak.
Me too, Moya. Me too. And you know what I was really amazed about is that you don't even see the actual shark until way into the second half of the movie.
Yeah,
And
which is so smart.
because he had so many problems, he was a genius in how he did it because the shark is talked about and we see the results of the shark's actions. And that was a method that was employed by Hitchcock. So he's very strongly influenced by Alfred Hitchcock when he made this movie. And also another thing that he borrowed from Hitchcock, not only like the camera thing that he does with Roy Scheider on the beach, but also there is a tried and true method of sustaining fear in movies that he got from Hitchcock. What you do is you make the opening piece of violence. You start with that. It's so violent that the audience, when faced with more danger, they will recoil in horror with anticipation of a repetition of that violence. But the Jaws attacks became successively more brutal and bloody. So yeah, they ramped up even more. They became a little bit more graphic. But that's where he kind of borrowed somewhat from Hitchcock in the way he pulled that off. Yeah, and he makes the sea captain, played by Robert Shaw, he makes reference to the true story of the USS Indianapolis. This was during World War II. It was a Navy ship. It was torpedoed by a Japanese sub, and it was in the Philippine Sea. And their ship sank, and they didn't have any way to let anybody know their position or what happened to them. And so those poor men were in those waters for 5 days before they got rescued. So out of 1,100 that started out because of, exposure, dehydration, shark attacks, a number of things. Yeah, only 316 men survived out of 1,100. It's a true story.
And see, again, this movie is celebrating whether it wanted to or not. I don't know. I assume I maybe it did. Manhood being because, oh my gosh, Georgia, can you imagine that? And so you're saying that story. I remember when I was in a when I was in college, I think I had just started college, and back home they were celebrating that incident. And you telling that story, because I kept saying, why are they going on and on about that? But they were celebrating that incident because back home in New Orleans there's the World War II Museum. And I think that story and that display, or I'm not saying the right thing, you know what I'm trying to say, was that feature was going to be in the museum. And so, and because I had never heard that story, I wasn't a history buff like I am now. But yeah, oh wow, everything comes full circle. That is amazing.
It truly is, and I highly recommend going to the It's wonderful, the World War II Museum in New Orleans. It is a must-see. Anybody who's an American needs to go. It is excellently done. There is so many human interest. First person, they were able to interview these wonderful veterans before they passed away. So you can
Let me
see
see if
them
I can
and hear
find
them.
something about
And they
that.
have a way that's really amazing through AI that you can ask them a question and they will answer it. I know it's mind-blowing. You can ask a question and they have it so that the veteran can answer the question for you. Yes, it's
That's
mind-blowing. It really
weird.
is.
That would
That's
freak
how good
me out.
it
And you're saying that we should have known. Let me share my screen that there's actually a movie featuring one of my former boyfriends, Nicolas Cage, about that USS Indianapolis Men of Courage. And I didn't know that. So it came out in 2016. I wonder, was it one of these straight to video? I bet it was one of those straight to video, because that he wasn't hitting around this time. Wow.
I think you're right, Moya. I think it probably was released straight to video. Yeah.
Okay, I was going to try to find... So I guess, you know, yeah, like you always go on YouTube or just search, you know, internet. And I want to try to get... I want to try to get the actual... Okay, here we go. The National Worldwide... World War II website about that. Okay, so let me just show this real quick before we get out of here, because that needs to be acknowledged. That story haunted me as a young lady, because I just could not believe it. And so let me tell you, like my cousin's husband is one of the sweetest men you ever know. Here's the website, National WW2 Museum in New Orleans. He was a National Guard. And I kept saying, you know, I was young and ignorant. I said, what do I keep going on about that? Because like every, you would see commercials like all the time. And I like, keep going on about that. So then he told me what you just told me. And then I kind of saw a little bit more of it. And girl, that haunted me forever and ever. So thank you, Georgia, for bringing that back. You know, we didn't start out to talk about that. But thank you for bringing that story to the forefront, because it needs to be. They don't make men, in my opinion, like those guys back in those days. You know what I mean? Men, you know, I don't want to get too far into that. But men are built differently. They have different priorities now. Let's just say it like that. Different interests now and then. Wow. So this is on YouTube. So Harlan Twibel, The Sinking and Rescue of USS Indianapolis. So I know I didn't went off on a different tangent, but that's just, oh my gosh. What they call World War II people, the greatest generation? Absolutely.
They sure are, and they deserve that.
They deserve it. They deserve that. Well, Georgia, I don't think I have anything else. I'm going to give you the final word, my dear.
Well, thank you, Moya. Yeah, I just, a couple of little things. This film did win 3 Oscars for Best Film Editing, Original Dramatic Score, and Sound. And of course, we've got to talk about that masterpiece sound, where it's 2 notes, 2 very menacing, haunting, ominous notes played on a tuba.
Isn't that crazy? That's crazy.
Yes. And it was just genius, and it was brilliant, because the first time that John Williams played it for Steven Spielberg, he thought he was playing a joke on him. And he goes, no, I'm serious. This is how you know. Here comes the shark.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just perfect. Absolutely perfect. And also, I wanted to say that, you know, before this movie came out, we had already had, you know, creature features.
Yeah.
Because
that's right.
We did, you know, you all remember movies like King Kong and Godzilla. And, you know, there was The Fly, The Creature from the Black Lagoon, and Jurassic Park. Even. But this movie spawned a whole bunch more of like big, scary, frightening animal.
You said Jurassic movie. Park?
What, yes, Jurassic Park.
It was before this one?
No, well, actually, no, Jurassic Park came out way after this one. Yeah. But we had some creature features, but this movie spawned a lot more of like menacing, scary animal movies, because we had movies like Arachnophobia,
yeah.
Alligator, Anaconda.
Right.
I was trying to remember so many of these movies that came out.
Even a bear. We had something recently with a bear attacking people.
Grizzly. Oh, yeah, Grizzly.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can see how much of a profound historic impact this movie made. And amazingly, a lot of people say the movie is better than the book. How often do you hear people say the movie is better than the book? Well, this time, I think it's pretty unanimous.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, Peter Benchley wrote the screenplay with Carl Gottlieb, I believe, and Peter Benchley wrote the book. So, yeah, I mean, I that's very rare. And so I'm just showing a German version of the thing. And but it's in Asian markets. I mean, everybody except you has seen this movie.
I'm the last person on the planet.
Yes, you're the last person on the planet who didn't see it. Right.
Yeah.
That's so funny. What else you got for us?
Hey, Moya, it's a wrap for me today.
Okay. Well, guys, thank you so much. We enjoyed our time with you in this look at Jaws from 1975. If you are the other person, please don't let Georgia be the last person on Earth. And you don't have to out yourself, but go look at it or go look at it again. And let us know what you think. Let us know what you think about our take on it. And I didn't have time, but go on YouTube and search the end of summer blockbusters or just the history of summer blockbusters, and you're gonna see Jaws and then like Georgia said, Star Wars. But we don't have summer blockbusters like we used to anymore. And that's because of a lot of reasons. This year we sort of kind of with Marvel with the Wolverine and Deadpool movie, but that's kind of a, even though it is a $1 billion movie, it's kind of a niche market. Like you got to really be into that. But with like Jaws and Star Wars, like everybody wanted to see that. And then that those this Wolverine and Deadpool is like a sequel, so you know they kind of already have people built in. But before, when they introduced Jaws, Star Wars, and the Indiana Jones and such, like nobody has seen any of that, you know, right, Georgia? So you were going in virgins, if you will, to it. And so I give them a little bit more credence because of that fact. But like I said, going forward, you would have these blockbusters or tent poles, and then Disney dominated a lot of the summer blockbusters, and then like around Christmas with the animation and stuff. But yeah, that model has kind of been gone to the wayside for political and financial reasons that we'd be here all day talking about. Much better channels that can talk about that. One of them is Midnight's Edge and WD Pro and Valiant Renegade and their crew and Friday Night Tights and Ripa and so many other and so you know, and if you don't like any of those, go look at just do a YouTube search. But they really talk about the death of the summer blockbuster. And hopefully we can fix it, because girl, I used to look, I don't know about you, even I was a big movie goer, but you did look forward to that hype. You know what I mean? Because I remember when the Terminator, I didn't see the first one because I was a kid, but when Terminator 2, was it Judgment Day? Whatever the one with the liquid dude. Oh girl, that movie was packed. We could not wait to see that. So, and I missed that hype.
You know, I do too, Moy, and I remember that. You know, you'd always like look for that big summer movie that it was like big, you always wanted to see in the summertime. I know, I missed that. I remember it. That was such a fun thing, you know, a part of our lives, you know, and during
Right.
that era. That was so great.
Right. And it was a sense of community that we've
Yeah.
lost, because that summer movie brought everybody together. That's movies and blockbusters, and that was something we all could experience as a community and as Americans, sitting in that theater and eating the popcorn. So, girl, you go in the theater now, you could roll a bowling ball down the aisle and don't hit a person. Okay, it's just really, really sad. And so now that's leading to the death of the movie theater. You know, and then with streaming, you know, they kind of went too heavy into streaming and it's not working out like they thought it would. So anyway, that's a whole nother story. But check out Jaws. Let us know what you think. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe on our YouTube channel. Don't forget to comment and like us on Facebook. We always look forward to your comments. Georgia, what is our next movie?
Our next movie we're going to show on August 31st is Waiting to Exhale.
From one extreme, you know how we do here. We are from one extreme to the next. None of our movies have anything to do with each other, which that's fine with us. We like to give you a wide variety, if you will. So yes, Waiting to Exhale, starring Whitney Houston and Angela Bassett and so many other lovely ladies. Can't wait to talk about that with you. Well, for How Betty Davis Saved My Life, Life Lessons from Classic Hollywood. And I guess, what's the lesson in this, Georgia? The life lesson in Jaws?
Oh, gosh, the life lesson. Sometimes you really do need a bigger boat.
Yes, and don't go in the water. But you're right, I like yours. Sometimes you do need a bigger boat. Well, you guys take care. We can't wait to see you next time. So be looking out for us. How Betty Davis Saved My Life, Life Lesson from Classic Hollywood. I'm Moya.
And I'm Georgia.
You guys take care, and we cannot wait to see you again. Remember, waiting to exhale on the 31st. Don't miss it.